is Common Sense Radio. Straightforward and no excuses.
All right. Come on now.
This is the Steve Gruber Show.
Call me crazy.
Ooh, yeah.
What I said was perfectly right and spot on accurate.
Boy's got a mouth like a cannon, always shooting at all.
Stop. Yeah, stop. I mean, you're way off script.
Got it in me. Gonna quit until it all comes out.
Hey, boy.
Yeah, you know, it's not cynical, it's common sense.
Pay attention to me when I'm talking to you.
I'm gonna rock the nation. Rock the nation.
Genuine, accountable, and raw. Here is Steve Gruber.
Welcome back to the Steve Gruber Show. 6 minutes after the top of the hour, Duran Martinez in for Steve. 888-900-9966. It is Thursday. It is that time. Congressman Tim Walberg joining us on the show. Good morning, sir. Welcome back. How are you?
Duran, good to be with you. I'm doing very well. Saddened by another senseless act of violence that went on in South Carolina. I think we all suffer for what took place there.
You know, and I agree with you. This is truly sad in a time that we are so divided on so many things. You know, racially divided. We already have enough problems, and we don't have all the facts on this. And I don't want to, and I'm not going to, and I don't agree with the fact that some are jumping on the bandwagon of hate crime at this time. We need to focus on the lives lost, the families left behind, and finding the killer.
Absolutely. Regardless of race, creed, color, religion, this case, this is still a senseless act of violence. It's wrong. And the perpetrator of this has to be brought to justice. Society has to know that this is something that is, number one, not condoned, but will not be tolerated. And you're right, we are divided, and I think our nation on all sides has to come back to the right and begin to accept the fact that there will be disagreements, there will be misunderstandings, there'll be differences of opinion, but we're Americans, we're individuals that God has created, and let's treat ourselves the right way and unify again. That's what has to take place.
Agreed. Congressman Tim Walberg joining us here on the show. Federal pension reform, one of the topics I have here in front of me. We talked about pensions earlier, that some of these on local levels, on city levels and county levels, are really kind of getting out of hand. And when budgets are put together and put forth to the public, that's not really in our face. It's not really presented. And in places like Detroit, it's become an issue because now that the pensions are there, they've been written in place, we have to come up with the money, and that falls back on the taxpayers.
Well, it does. And back when I was in the state legislature in the late 90s, we ended the defined benefit plan for members of state legislature and a number of other office holders and went to a basically 401k defined contribution plan. And that's carried on because we saw it was unsustainable, even for the legislative retirement fund, to continue supporting defined benefits. Subsequent to that, the state legislature over the past years has moved that direction for other state employees. It's a reality. In days gone by, government employees were generally paid less than the private sector, but that has altered and changed to the point now that in many cases government employees are paid at a higher rate than the private sector. And that's not an attack on government employees, but I think it's an attack on the fact that, wait a second, it still is taxpayer supported, and the taxpayers can't be floundered by a system that ultimately breaks the bank. So that's why the push toward pension reform in saying to local, state, county officials and federal officials, which we're on, basically on a 401k plan, we have to go that direction because it has to carry its own weight, and we all have to have some responsibility in putting aside for our own retirement.
Now, when it comes to the fact of workers' compensation on a federal level, Federal government spent $2.8 billion compensating employees, including U.S. Postal Service workers, in the year ending 2014. And that's a lot of money. Were there a lot of, you know, claims that brought forth that number?
Well, there are a lot of claims that brought forth, but we have to get a grip on what constitutes a justified claim.
Sure.
And that's the challenge here. And as we've been going through, I sit on Oversight and Government Reform Committee, and a lot of this information is coming out because for the past 6 years, we actually have been doing oversight. It's been ugly work, I have to say, Durand. The stuff that we're seeing and we're wondering why, everything from excessive workers' compensation claims payment for people who don't work, literally don't work at the job or spend 6 hours on average a day looking at pornography on a taxpayer-funded computer. And then during that time, having been given awards for service and bonuses, those are the type of things that are ugly to see, and people are hearing more about it because we're doing that oversight and we're trying to crack down on it. I have legislation that will look at the senior executive services, the top-level management in government, generally appointed in nature, and yet some of those people who have received bonuses and expansions and increases in their salaries are not performing the oversight necessary to make sure that the people under them are doing their jobs and giving a taxpayer every hour of the day that they're being paid for.
Congressman Tim Walberg joins us here. I guess that was more along the lines of my question. I'm sure the claims are there, therefore the $2.8 billion probably wouldn't have been spent. But there are a lot of cases, you know, in any form of employment where an injury off the job sort of gets its way into on the job, thus making the employer responsible for that money.
Yes. And that's where we have to do necessary oversight. And you have powerful unions. The most powerful unions today are in our government entities, something Franklin Delano Roosevelt said should never be part of the government employment system, that being unions, because, frankly, they're negotiating with themselves, and the taxpayers are paying for it. They ought to be treated appropriately. They ought to be cared for as any human being should, but they are government employees and serve at the will and the needs of the people. And as we've seen the growth of SEIU and others that have huge power and huge membership and huge cost, that basically says to the taxpayer, you are going to support us with whatever we say. Wait a second, who's serving who at that point? And we've got to get a grip on it, and that will cause a lot of heat. There'll be a lot of misrepresentation that comes back by leadership of those various employee units, but really not at the benefit of the employee or, more importantly, in this case, the taxpayer who has to fund all of this and is asking themselves, wait a second, I'm working longer, working harder, and enjoying it less because more of my hard-earned money is being taken out in tax dollars. And then when I read about some of these abuses of the public trust, I wonder who's the fool here. So we have to get a grip on it, and that, again, is what this oversight is about.
All right, Congressman Tim Walberg joining us here. More with him next, 888-900-9966 on the Michigan Talk Network.
The Steve Gruber Show, jump-starting your day with the news that matters.
Welcome back to the Steve Gruber Show. Durand Martinez in for Steve, visiting with the congressman from Michigan's 7th District. Branch, Eaton, Hillsdale, Jackson, Lenawee, and Monroe counties, along with parts of Washtenaw County, southern Michigan. Congressman Tim Walberg joins us here. Congressman, recently we had another suspected terrorist arrested here in the United States. We are seeing these ISIS sympathizers, ISIL sympathizers, popping up more and more. There are investigations going on in all 50 states, and yet a lot of times we're being told that, you know, just to turn a blind eye to what's going on with these attacks across the world when we're now starting to see issues here in our own country.
Yeah, but, well, number one, please don't turn a blind eye. If you see something that is truly concerning, report it. We get reports regularly of concerns, even in our district. Our office regularly contacts the intelligence agencies, FBI, just to make sure, report in. They appreciate it, and I think that helps society be safer in the process as we take control of it ourselves. But on the other side of the ledger, I think there's a reason why we in our federal government need to be more efficient and correct in promoting our democracy, our way of life, our freedom that comes with personal liberty to the world, and making sure that the bad guys understand that America is not setting back. We're not being idle, and we will not be pushed by the bad guys. And that means a concerted effort, as well as a strong voice coming from the top, our president, on down through our members of Congress and the people. America is still a nation that is looked to for strength, but across the world, in travels that I've had and the people I've talked with, whether they be in elected and high office in countries or general public, there's a concern about America and what direction we're going, and yet there's an appreciation for what America has been.
There is a concern, and I've been, you know, I don't read probably as much as I should, but when the headlines come that we, as the country we used to be looked at, is not looked at the same way, that our approval ratings globally are below those of China and Russia, that really kind of, it really sits with me. I have to take issue with that.
That hurts. That really hurts, because America's always been looked at in general, and this comes from a lot of people making contacts with a lot of people around the world. We've been looked at generally as a nation that is solid, that is powerful, but is peaceful, but a nation also that will not sit idly by for an extended period of time and let bad things happen. There's a concern out there. Just recently, being over in Estonia, and three of the Nordic countries, in Norway and Sweden and Finland, I clearly got the impression, and those other members of Congress who were there on a delegation trip, looking at education and workforce issues and military affairs issues, we got a very clear indication there's concern. What direction will America go? And yet, relationship to trade and defense capabilities, pushing back against Russia and China specifically, they still want to see America as a strong voice of reason, and then ultimately the strong backbone of defense, if necessary, for the freedoms of the world. And that's a good thing. Not to say that we have to jump in everywhere, but I think just the mere fact of strength in the United States and strong statements and indicators that we will stand with our allies bodes well for continuing peace.
What do you think, speaking with Congressman Tim Walberg here on the Steve Gruber Show, Congressman, I looked at 2016 to election time. I'm not asking you to give me specifics, but as far as a candidate for President of the United States, do you think something is going to have to be done about foreign policy, about the outlook and how it's presented?
Oh, absolutely. I think the next president has to be a foreign policy wonk, as it were. The world has to hear from our president and hear some of the traditional themes of America that I just talked about. The president has to be one who, if you go back and look at, say, Roosevelt or Truman or Reagan, different parties, different domestic policy, but on the foreign policy, generally speaking, they were resolute in saying, we don't necessarily want every or expect every country to be Americanized. Well, we expect countries to live freely and let their people live freely and not encroach upon other countries' rights. And that's something that America was solid in. Look at Reagan, who just by a number of words and actions said, Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall. Ultimately, the Berlin Wall fell, and an entire half of a population of a country became free again. The Soviets crumbled, and we had the end of the Cold War by strong, resolute stances, backed up sometimes by smoke and mirrors back in the United States with our arms capability, but nonetheless, the world believed us.
Sure.
That has to happen again.
No, and there's no question that when Mr. Reagan, when President Reagan put that forth to President Gorbachev, there was no "will you please." It was direct, and we have not seen that. And I'm looking forward to hopefully getting back to that. And again, Congressman Tim Walberg, I appreciate you joining me here on the show. Appreciate your insight and your information and your hard work, sir.
Good to be with you, and have a great weekend.
All right, you as well, Congressman Tim Walberg, 7th District. Joining us here on the Steve Gruber Show, 888-900-9966. More coming your way with Beth Fisher next, here on the Michigan Talk Network.
This is the Steve Gruber Show, bringing you the news and newsmakers that affect you most.
Welcome back to the Steve Gruber Show. I'm Duran Martinez, in for Steve. Busy day. Been a busy day. We're still muddling through. 27 minutes after the top of the hour, Patrick Shannon joins us. Is it time for Michigan's higher education to consolidate? Reading through this a little bit, I want to get more information on the question itself. Patrick Shannon, welcome to the show. How are you?
Good morning, Grant.
When you talk about consolidation with Michigan's higher education, the 15 public universities to consolidate. Could you expound on that a little bit for me, please?
Okay. The idea that I've thought about, because I've been a consumer and I've been a parent, and then also I've been involved with healthcare, and it's not just consolidation, but just, you have to think in terms of affiliations. How can the universities combine their resources to better the experience of the students? Because ultimately, for all the... if there are inefficiencies, that the cost, the inefficiencies are passed down to the students, and as we all know, the higher education continues to increase in cost. Is there a better way to do that? Michigan is really the only state that has these independent universities that, without some centralized coordinating of what's being offered out there.
Now, recently, as it will be next year, Michigan State University increases per credit hour are going to go up. So you're saying this is possibly could be a way to avoid that?
Well, I think it's systemic. I think if you have 15 different ways of doing things, you're going to have some inefficiencies. Certainly the Michigan State, the U of M's, Wayne State's, and I would include Michigan Tech. They're okay. I think the other universities that really should be thinking about affiliations. If you look at healthcare, I'm on a hospital board, a small one, and these things are all being we're affiliating with larger organizations because, for example, IT is incredibly expensive, and in order to keep up, it's very difficult to do that when you're a small organization, and so. What you were seeing in healthcare is these affiliations and also acquisitions. But I just think there's probably a better way to do this. I think in the overall, there's got to be a better way. I bet there are inefficiencies built into the system. That's when I said it's probably systemic the way we do it. But it doesn't mean that you'd get away rid of all the universities. This means that I think they've got to work more closely together before some of them even perish.
So the implosion possibly is what could happen from their inefficiencies as a structure of education, structural education. But here's a question I have, and this may be just for me personally. There are a lot of people that are uncomfortable with certain hospital affiliations, and they may not be comfortable with the whole position in general.
Yeah, I think it's just looking at what's happened there, and you can certainly improve on what's happened in the healthcare. Certainly you have acquisitions. You have actually buyouts. You've had DMC and also Marquette General, and the hospital in Grand Rapids being purchased. But, you know, I don't think we ever want to go there where you in public education. But at the same time, there are some unique affiliation agreements out there where you combine IT. You combine, for example, Lake Superior State has probably one of the best fish health programs in the country, if not the best. I would think it is the best. But then there again, Central and Grand Valley have Great Lakes fisheries program and Great Lakes health water. Well, why aren't we thinking in terms of combining those? Why wouldn't that be good for students? Because we have such rich resources here. But I think segmenting it among 15 different universities might not be the best way. All I'm saying, let's start the discussion. Let's talk about some affiliations or some other things that the universities can engage in to decrease some of the inefficiencies that occur.
Speaking with Patrick Shannon here on the Steve Gruber Show, you know, when you bring up things in terms, I guess I can better understand when you talk about the fisheries program at Lake Superior State, and then, of course, the other states in, you know, near similar bodies of water where the research can be conducted, I can see where that would be a benefit, where you would have the opportunity to take the studies collectively to better enhance the learning of the student.
I would just think that someone who had an affiliation concept, a university official, and then would meet with a governor or whomever, some leadership in Lansing, and say, look, we have this affiliation. Is there extra money for us to do this? Because it's good for students. You got to remember that we're in this for the education of students, and how better to do that but through affiliating and combining the resources that you find in the 15 different state universities. That's just the thought I've had. You know, like I said, I've been a parent. I paid tuition for myself. I paid tuition for my kids. And so, anyway, just some ideas.
No. And there, you know, again, when you put it into perspective, again, a way that I can better understand, I get it. It just, there's going to be a lot of question when you say affiliation with other state, other schools. You know, people are going to look
and... I'm a graduate of Central Michigan and the University of Michigan. My wife is Wayne State, and we have these, we have these loyalties. And but I think at some time we have to break it down. We have to also question, why are we the only state that does it this way? And that is, we're pretty unique when you look nationally. So there's got to be a better way. It can be informal. Informal or as formal you want the affiliations, but at least get the conversation started. Because there are some, we're struggling. I mean, we don't have enough students unless you want to go start recruiting students from overseas. But we have a decreasing student population. So it may be the time to rethink how we do this.
Patrick Shannon is our guest here. What about incentives? There's a lot of incentives for students if they study well, but to come to these specific universities that may be a part of a bigger picture.
Yeah, you know, wouldn't that be interesting if we got that discussion started with some of the smaller universities that have extremely good programs? You know, and I'll throw Lake Superior State out there. Wonderful engineering program, nursing, this fish health program. I mean, we're right in the middle of it up here. And why not? If we could get more money for something like that. And certainly I'm not promoting that at this time, but I think it might not be a bad idea that we sit down and think, because collectively, I know there is the President's Council and they deal with something, but this is a bigger issue than just the President's Council. This is about the, you know, the future of the education, the higher education of the state, and we're basing it upon an economy that existed in the post World War II. We're in a different economy now. Like I said previously, IT is extraordinarily expensive, especially like in healthcare and otherwise. And there may be ways to do this. You know, not all hospitals, for example, are good in hip surgeries. You go other places, but you know, there. So I think it's time we start thinking in terms of public goods, how to then deliver them in the best and most efficient way for our consumers, our students, and the best we can.
All right, Patrick Shannon, appreciate you joining us, and a little envious that you're in the UP and I'm not.
It's
raining here, but I'd rather be in the Sioux. <Okay. laughs> Patrick Shannon, thank you so much.
Nice to speak with you.
You as well. Thank you so much. 19 minutes away from the top of the hour on the Michigan Talk Network.
The Steve Gruber Show. Jump starting your day with the news that matters.
Away from the top of the hour, I'm Duran Martinez in for Steve Gruber. 888-900-9966. That is the number to get on board the conversation. Join us if you would. Just a little bit of time left here in the show. Again, still looking for the person involved in a mass shooting in South Carolina during a prayer meeting last evening. And I, like many others, even though this is a terrible crime and we don't know who or what motivated this whole thing, calm and prayer being fought for by many. And you almost hate to say you know what's going to happen and who will be showing up. There's an opportunity there, but not going to fall into it, man. Steve Bucci, the director of the Douglas and Sarah Allison Center for Foreign and National Security Policy, joins us here on the Steve Gruber Show. Welcome, sir. Good morning. How are you?
I'm well. Thank you for having me.
Not at all. Thank you for joining us. The announcement was made, upcoming deployment of 450 additional troops to Iraq. The Defense Department said that they upped the ante and outlined a plan to expand the number of American bases in the country. That's kind of curious because I was watching the news the other night. They were interviewing some Iraqi soldiers, some guys that have been fighting some of the terrorist groups within their own country, and they're not terribly thrilled about Americans being there.
Well, particularly the folks in the Shia militias, who were some of our biggest foes when we were there fighting against them. They're the ones who have said, you know, not no, but heck no, because they want help from Iran. That's who they want in the country, and that's who's embedded with their units now. So there's some politics there as well as, you know, personal opinion.
It's rather curious that they would want help from Iran, given the trouble that they've had over the years, centuries, whatever the case.
Well, remember, there's a good chunk of the Iraqi people are Shia Muslims, like the Persian Iranians. So there's common cause there, and you know, they consider the Sunnis, who, you know, that was Saddam Hussein's sect, and for many, many years, the Shia in Iraq were a set-upon minority. So looking over the border to their cousins to the east there, even though Arabs don't normally get along with Persians, Arab Shias do get along with Persians. And when you're looking at somebody like ISIS, who are very radical Sunnis, who basically are going to kill all these Shia if they get the chance, you could understand why they would, you know, be comfortable turning there.
Sure. Appreciate Steve Bucci is our guest here. When we put in 450, that almost kind of opens the door for even more. And this is something that the current administration says, we didn't want that to happen. We got everybody out of there, but now they're putting people back. How do we explain that?
Well, first of all, just putting in 450 guys is not going to make a heck of a lot of difference. They've already said only 50 of those 450 are actually going to be training anybody on the Iraqi side. The other 400 are there to provide security for the 50 and logistical support for them. So, you know, this kind of incremental, very small bump up to an already not terribly robust response is probably not going to have a big effect on the outcome of this. So it's kind of the president again trying to say, well, I'm doing more without doing very much more.
No, and it's, you know, again, you brought that point up that hits the nail right on the head, is the look, we're doing something about it.
Yeah, the other piece that's interesting is the administration is constantly pointing to the fact, well, look, this is an Iraqi problem. The Iraqis need to deal with this. You know, we're there to be supportive, but they really need to do it. But, you know, ISIS is not just an Iraqi problem. It certainly is a problem for Iraq, but it's a regional problem. They're threatening not only Iraq, but all of our other allies in the region, Israel, Jordan, Turkey, Saudi Arabia, the other Gulf Arab states. Those guys are after all those regimes, and you know, they would really love it to kick off a gigantic sectarian war in the region with Sunnis versus Shia. They think that kind of stuff is not just cool, it's ordained by God. So they need to be dealt with, and to be honest with you, we're going to have to be part of the solution.
Now, putting more bases in Iraq, how far out of, I mean, harm's way seems to be everywhere over there, but, you know, how close to a lot of the actual fighting will some of these bases be? Is there any plan for that yet?
They really have not articulated where they're going to put them, but this whole lily pad thing, that's an old-school counterinsurgency term borrowed from, you know, back in the 50s and early 60s. I'm not sure it's applicable here against ISIS. While ISIS is bigger than a normal terrorist group, you know, and they're holding terrain, they're not quite an insurgency just inside Iraq. They're something more than that. I mean, the only analogous situation we've ever had to this before was when we were fighting the Taliban in late 2001, early 2002, where a terrorist group had taken terrain and was now running as a quasi-national government. And we need to be honest with you, it's going to take boots on the ground. I'd love it to be somebody else's boots with our guys helping them, but I'm not sure that's going to work. So we need to at least be thinking, all right, if we're going to eliminate this real threat to U.S. national interests, the U.S. may have to invest more than just some trainers.
Steve Bucci, I appreciate your insight on this. And you know, we have to sit back. Sadly, we have to sit back and wait and see where it's going to go. But hopefully we won't have, like you said, the amount of troops in there that this is probably going to call for. But I think it's going to be inevitable.
I do, too, and it's unfortunate. I mean, my son's still in the Army, so, you know, I still have a dog in this fight. But but sometimes, you know, if you're going to be the leader of the free world, and we still are, even though the president doesn't want to admit it, you know, we got to act like it.
You got to lead, plain and simple. Steve Bucci, our guest here, thank you so much for joining us on the Steve Gruber Show on the Michigan Talk Network, 8 minutes away from the top of the hour.